Good afternoon. Lipraneng, according to our ad, I have no idea what that means, but whatever it says, just follow the instructions. Good afternoon and happy Monday. And perfect weather here in the capital, assuming that it's all over the country. Then we are looking at, to say by 2030, we are in 4 million. But, welcome to Home Run, and this is your favorite duo. That's Helmut and Dwight on Equal FM, your Drive Time Show. Yeah, that's a nice, move away from the 2030 subject.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But I don't think we'll make 4 million by 2030. I really don't think so.
You understand? Okay. Dwight, you know that there are a lot of our agenda listening. At this point, on behalf of all of them, let me ask you a question. Is that a challenge?
As long as they can pay for the kids. As long as they can pay for their kids, there is no challenge. As long as they can pay for their kids. And we all know what that means, guys.
Yeah.
You mean the maintenance, it's the maintenance courts, will start ramping up their particular duties and responsibilities towards us. It's not about having challenges or about being a TikTok challenge for that matter.
someone is going to be saying challenge accepted.
Yeah, as long as homeboy can afford all those.
Yeah, as long as he's just don't use Usain Bolt.
Uh-huh. Those disposable diapers.
Yeah. Ish. I've seen the prices.
No, that's not where the handbrake lies, Hamoud. There are so many women that are saying they don't want children.
Yeah.
And a challenge accepted or not on terms of in our gender's particular sort of like ability to accept or dispense challenges of any kind. In that discussion, usually that's a two-way street. Those are two people that have to coordinate and negotiate about that action. So, yeah, our gender, we can accept all challenges as much as we want, but the moment it comes to like, let's try and reach Vision 2030 by any means possible, there's a negotiation process that has to be fulfilled first.
Someone made a meme out of that. And you have people that are in that position where they really, where they really want to have a kid and they're struggling.
Yeah.
And then you have those ones that are just, it's nowhere near the plan. Bank balance minus 14.
Mm.
Yeah, just one hug. They're expecting. Everyone said,
a hug.
Uh-huh. Technology.
Okay, with hugging.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't want to go, explaining things in excruciating detail. Because, don't get me wrong, I can explain that in excruciating detail. Problem is, my boss will call 083-288-4401 and, pretend to be a listener.
I'm going to let that hang there, Helmut.
Yeah, I'll also not complete that one. No. So let's get to today's discussion, which is, it's a global warming, almost like climate change discussion, but it's not climate change in a sense of, the upcoming conference of parties, because this is one that took place here at home and hosted by two neighboring countries. Amongst the hosts are two neighboring countries, that's Namibia and South Africa. And we basically came together to figure out several things on I think the most important thing when we look at it from the conference that we're going to be using today as the main point of reference is that climate change is with us, And we have a lot of mitigation strategies that we're basically trying to put together. And this is a global, this is, let me just say, for the most part, a global agreement of trying to, you know, trying to figure out how to, you know, how to live with it while we try to mitigate it, because it's not, well, it's not, it doesn't have an off switch that you can just have to press a switch and then get it over with.
Mm.
It's something that you have to live with and basically mitigate with time. And they put in the effort, it obviously depends on the effort that you put in, then you could, you could see some progress in terms of that, whatever mitigation measures you are putting in place. The conference is, this conference is more in the direction of the mitigating, more like when disaster strikes, mostly emanating from this climate change issues that we're dealing with. How do we handle it? That is the ultimate question. How do we handle it?
Well, here's a weird thing, Helmut.
Yeah.
Besides this particular discussion and the literature and the video and audio resource that we obviously had access to. And this is based upon the recent discussion of last week in terms of this get together that took place here in Windhoek for 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
In last week at the same time, probably one of the world's richest men, Bill Gates, decided to change his tune on climate change by stating, yeah, maybe we should help the developing countries with more, with more target-oriented,
energy transition.
Like just energy transition, like affordable housing, like investment in our healthcare and stuff like that. And he then goes and says, yeah, I don't think, to say or to make it look like climate change has a definite doomsday button somewhere or doomsday clock counting down towards it somewhere, being present or being obvious for everyone to see, that we should make such a big sort of like a hoo-ha out of climate change. And I sat there thinking to myself, what is this man saying? One of the world's richest men. Do you know why I make that statement?
Mm-hmm.
Countries like Namibia and Botswana are automatically 2 degrees hotter than the stated goal of the global climate change mitigation strategy. Don't get 2 degrees hotter. Now, if you go to a country, for example, like North America, who's probably their average highest temperature in their country, probably is something in, close to 30 degrees Celsius. Namibia and Botswana can easily reach 40 degrees Celsius. I say easily, across the threshold, meaning on average across the both countries. And we can even surpass the 40 degrees Celsius. I remember with one of the F1 races, when they started in Qatar, just before COVID, when they started in Qatar, one of the biggest concerns was in the city of Doha, that the cars can't drive during daytime hours.
Because of the heat.
Because the track gets so hot,
melting.
That tire will literally, but here's the thing. It's fine you driving on the track with your normal car.
Yeah.
On a tar road. That car reaches a speed of 330 kilometers per hour in a straight line. That heat is already, that track is already boiling hot.
Yeah.
Throwing the friction
at that speed.
Yeah, that car moving at that speed on that road literally speeds up the pace at which the tire is being degraded.
Yeah.
They sometimes have to race at a later part of the day or an earlier part of the day just so that the heat is not, or the race is shifted to a different time of the year so that the heat on the track is not so heavy on the tire management system of the teams, because the strategy in F1, Helmut, and this is now just to highlight a particular things for the listeners. The strategy in F1 over the years has gone from, they also now have to showcase this green energy transition or this this climate adaptability component in their racing. So they, at one stage, they had V12 engines. They've come down. So in the past, they first started from like, six cylinder engines, went up to 8 cylinders. Then the V-shaped blocks were obviously invented and created, and they had the large engines. They at one stage had a V12 engine variant that was standard across all teams. Then they came down to V10s. Then they went down to V8s. The V8s have been proven supposedly to be the most, competitive in terms of it's not an engine that breaks down too easily. It's also not an engine that actually has too much hassles, but it was also proven the current standard that they're on, the V6 engines or the V6 variant engines. And a previous time in the 80s that they had V6s or six cylinder engines, that engine also was the best in terms of providing the best competitive value for the entertainment to the audiences, as well as also providing the best competition to anyone. Now, the reason why I'm showing you the engines specifically is that the engines themselves also kick out a lot of power.
Yeah.
That power gets transferred to the axles, the wheels, and the tires. Now, imagine you're driving on a racetrack that is boiling hot at 50 degrees Celsius because you can't pick up the thing and put it in the shade or put it in the sea to try and cool it down and bring it back quickly again. There is no such thing. Now that thing has been lying there in that Qatari desert, just bakingly hot, waiting there for any tire to show up, and your car, and you see literally that your tires are turning to marshmallows.
Yeah.
Everyone would say, let's wait for the track to cool down. And usually a track takes about 2 hours to cool down. Later on, they started doing night races in some cases because it's too hot to drive to drive the thing during the day.
I mean, it's literally a desert, so that's not surprising.
Exactly. Now, imagine such instances where you have a scenario where Bill Gates goes and makes a statement like that about, you know, maybe we should not be so overemphasized with climate change because there's supposedly no doomsday counter anywhere. And everyone is telling the guy, bruh, there are whole islands sinking in the Pacific Ocean, in the Oceania region. There are whole islands busy sinking. There are weird weather anomalies popping up.
Mm-hmm.
We're in November, Helmut. In October, we had this weird weather where we didn't know if we were boiling or not in October. And October was just the other side of this weekend. Then you get to the discussion of reading between the lines of his statement, because Donald Trump saw that particular interview. That was an interview given anyway to a American TV station in last week. Donald Trump sees the statement, goes onto his Truth Social platform and says, yes, we did it. We're busy convincing the world that climate change is a hoax. And for everyone that knows what happened at the start of this year, with the executive signings that Donald Trump did on 20 January. He literally went and announced he's going to withdraw the US out of the UN. He's going to end all climate change funding and initiatives in support of climate change. And he's going to encourage all fossil fuel exploration to be ramped up in the US specifically.
In other words, forget all the warnings about, you know, climate change related warnings about, fossil fuel.
Exactly. So if it was, for example, a discussion where Namibia, just like what happened last year when I showed you the two speeches that, former minister Shifeta had at the desertification COP and at COP29, they were pretty identical, but it's just he had to change them in terms of, you know, that each particular speech of his speaks towards each event.
Yeah.
And desertification is literally part and parcel of the broader fears of climate change, because you see lesser rainfall falling, then you see lesser rehabilitation of the soil coming back, specifically that the plants grow again and hold on to the topsoil.
Yeah.
This then leads to winds and weird scenarios happening on that topsoil, which destroys the topsoil layers. if everyone knows erosion, soil erosion, and the likes that we were taught in high school, soil erosion happens in two scenarios. Flash floods, washing away the topsoil because there's no plants holding onto that soil that allows for the water to fall and just sink or to be absorbed in the soil. And secondly, you've got dust storms or winds that actually, because once again, the rainfall has not fallen, the plants are busy dying in that vicinity. The plant later on becomes just a shell, you know, a dry piece of bush. And thus it is easy for the topsoil to be disturbed and to be, you know, basically kicked up into dust. What we would call dust, that would be the most precious part of your soil structure.
Yeah.
Blowing away in the wind. And you can literally see it blowing away in the wind. Sometimes feeling it in your eyes or your teeth or in your ears.
Yeah, you call it dust, but that's the most important part, especially when it comes to plant growth.
Exactly. And also to what they call that thing, anchoring soil. Because plants literally anchor the soil.
Yeah, the soil structure.
Yeah, they literally anchor the soil. Now, a basic geography lesson like that should obviously explain to any person out there how critical anything else out in the natural environment is. But we're obviously talking, you know, Helmut, we're talking about people who live in cities where they've got 10 million people in that city, to 20 million, to at some stages 25 million. Now, when you've got super cities in your country, obviously, you would have a pretty narrow understanding of what climate change is actually causing outside of such metropolises around the world. I mean, Helmut, some of the weird instances have obviously been, you know, like what many people say. Do you know that there are certain people, like, for example, in Namibia that probably have not seen Windhoek, or they'd be living in Windhoek, or living specifically, let's say, in one of the informal settlements, they probably have not seen this side of Windhoek. You know, when people make those particular statements, you know, it's slightly a surprising but a profound thing, because you can assume that there is someone like that. But then in the other scenario, you can literally flip that particular talking point also to the other context of saying, the person that knows what Windhoek looks like, have they ever seen the real needy on the other side of Windhoek, for example, going to the informal settlements and seeing, you know, the challenges that people deal with there, or being able to, let's for example say, try and understand the challenges in terms of access to resources or competition for resources that happen between communal farmers? Because a private commercial farmer will obviously know the piece of land they own is the only piece of land that they are working with. But when you go to a communal setting, you've got five farmers competing for the same piece of land,
yeah.
For the same grazing, for the same water resource, for the same, protection specifically in that communal area. And it's only plausible to then make further deductions from that scenario that I sketched, that the level of conflict is higher for a communal farmer than it is for a commercial farmer. The exposure rate for communal farmer is also higher under climate change changes than a commercial farmer. Yes, I can explain to you that for a commercial farmer, potentially there are guys that sit with weird anomaly or weather anomalies, like it only rained in that corner.
In the corner.
I know that happens. That really happens, guys. And it sounds funny, but it really happens.
You have crops dying on the other side.
And then the guy, he literally sees the cloud for dropping the water right there in that corner. And anything from there to where he's standing is just open skies and sunlight. So the climate change discussion in a Namibian context, it's a real life, real world, lived experience that we see.
Yeah.
South Africa obviously knows this. Botswana knows this. Zimbabwe knows this. Zambia knows this. Angola knows this. For us in Southern Africa, we are trying to do our particular thing. I would have loved it if we introduced a Great Green Wall initiative like the Chinese have done.
Yeah.
But then we also have to recognize, Helmut, that the Namib Desert is the world's oldest desert.
Yeah, definitely.
And then in between, there are people that would come and say, yeah, but what can you pick up from a desert? You know, what can you ascertain regarding climate change from a desert scenario? Well, for instance, if we started seeing regular rainfall in the desert, then you start asking questions.
Here's the thing. When did Bill Gates say that?
Apparently in last week, Armin.
Okay, this is, look, sometimes this is what we get. I remember Bill Gates during COVID-19 giving a lot of, advice on COVID-19. And he's not a doctor. So then that's when he was like, hang on a second, if I can give medical advice, how about weather? Now, the thing is...
And he became the largest landowner of agricultural land in the U.S. as well.
Yeah. Now, remember back in 2021 during COP26, the minister of Tuvalu at the time gave his climate change summit virtually, and he was standing underwater. It was a little dramatic, but the message he was trying to send is that his country is an island nation.
Mm.
Now, for them, the rise in sea levels are very apparent.
Yeah,
yeah, because they are losing, some parts of the island, like by the year, if I can put it that way. So that's actually that's one of those things that brings up more like how clear and apparently things like climate change are. And I also came across one article, I think that was by the University of Arizona, where the heading was before global warming was earth cooling down or heating up. So that's because there are a lot of when they say whenever we say science, we like to make it sound like it's a one size fits all, like they have this unanimous consensus on everything, yeah. But they don't.
Yeah.
They disagree on a lot of things. You have a lot of scientists that will tell you contrary to what's popular opinion and so on, on a specific subject. Now, that's not unheard of. That's very, that's true of any discipline.
Mm.
Now, that then brings us to today's discussion of, which is based on the 2025 Climate Change and Future of Africa Conference that was held here in the capital from the 9th of October to the 1st of November. That was this past Saturday.
Yeah.
Yeah. This event, pardon me. This event saw a lot of experts coming together to debate on whether or not climate change is real. But also to figure out, okay, how can we handle the negative consequences that are coming from this change? Because whether we like it or not, they are coming. And, I saw the theme somewhere. Let me see if I can steal that theme slowly. The theme of that event. The event was themed, a risk in time and space.
Yeah.
And I thought it was time space continuum, type of thing. It turns out, no, I just went a little too sci-fi. A risk in time and space, that was pointed out according to one gentleman, I think that was day one. Yeah. Professor Jacob Nyambe, who is the chair of commissions for NCRST.
Mm.
Yeah. And also the press article that put out on the HSRC, which is the Human Science Research Council. That's the South African body that co-hosted, that formed a group of entities that hosted this event together with the NCRST here in Namibia.
Yeah.
They pointed out that, the theme, it's indicating that, climate change negative impacts are coming for everyone irrespective of your geographical location. In other words, coming together and trying to figure out how to navigate all these challenges is much better than just saying, well, Okay, Namibia is talking about climate change. I mean, South Africa, how does that concern me? But here's the thing. When a drought comes and it's impacting the southern part of the southern part of Africa, all the countries in southern part of Africa are going to be impacted. And we saw this when a couple of years ago we had a drought, and so was Zambia, and so was Botswana. So coming together, that's where the theme now came in. So coming together to sort of like discuss the negative impacts of climate change is much better than each and everyone basically doing their own things, which makes a lot of sense.
It actually does, Hamut, because you also have to factor in the particular noise that's coming about regarding this climate change discussions around the world. At the heart of everything, and I'm going to pull things back now to last year's COP29, the article that I wrote about the least developed nations and island states being unhappy when they marched out of the negotiation hall was... things were just being discussed about them by, and predominantly who was leading that discussion was the EU. And at the heart of that particular worrisome discussion has been that
with either a non-alcoholic Heineken, Savannah, Vintook Original or Vintook Lemon, let's cheers to connecting, to moments shared and good vibes anytime, anywhere. Grab one of our great tasting non-alcoholic beers or ciders. Easy to connect, easy to enjoy. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you.
Welcome back. And I like the picture that was used. I mean, climate
no,
change.
No, sure. Helmut.
Now, anyway.
That's not climate change, David.
That's definitely, well, it's changing climate somewhere.
Of course, But yeah, so it was based upon, just pulling back the listeners a little bit earlier in our discussion.
Yeah.
It is based upon, obviously, the Bill Gates comment that was recently seen. Now, as mentioned, Bill Gates did this on a TV station interview in the US. And this is where this particular statement comes from. What does the statement say? It says, we, in brackets, just won the war on climate change hoax. Bill Gates has finally admitted that he was completely wrong on the issue. It took courage to do so. And for that, we are all grateful. MAGA. End of the post on Truth Social. It was posted 4 days ago, dear listeners.
On Truth Social.
Yeah, on Donald Trump's.
And he's ending with MAGA.
Yeah. You know, Hamut, there's nothing I can actually do about that part. But this has been obviously the particular discussion that has, I wouldn't say annoyed people, but you will forever and ever more start seeing business leaders or large business leaders, for example, like the likes of Bill Gates, always showing up, popping up somewhere specifically in terms of the dynamics, the changing dynamics happening around the world. We've seen it with Sam Altman.
Yeah.
I remember the basic income grant report we did about that came from his research arm, that literally proposed that
the loss of jobs, it's a solution for the massive loss of jobs due to technological advancement.
Yeah. So all Americans must now go on some sort of a basic income grant because of loss of jobs, and the grant has to come as to be sort of like a joint effort between the American government and who were the other two components?
Don't say the private sector.
No, but there was someone else also supposedly talking about there in terms of, you know, the rolling out of monies.
Wouldn't that be socialism?
But here's the downside. It's in a scenario, his suggestion was based upon a discussion of, that should be the government's responsibility. Yes, it'll be the government's responsibility, but it was also the government's responsibility to explore a dimension where they don't lose revenue, specific taxable revenue. Because if you don't have pay as you earn, which is a large tax base that you can sustainably tax from, versus corporate tax or earnings tax from a company.
I won't rely on that because they don't have a very good track record.
Plus, those things are always negotiated. But you that work for the company, you can't go and negotiate a tax bracket, Helmut.
No, you can't.
You are, if the revenue agency sees, okay, so the company is paying.
Not even your boss can do that. That's not even just your boss. Yeah, that's just coming the revenue, straight from the Ministry of Finance.
The revenue agency will see, oh, so this is what Dwight is being paid by Eagle FM in this bracket. You're automatically in this bracket. And that bracket has a particular percentage associated to it.
Yeah.
There is no negotiation. There is no identification. There's not even, hey, come, let us smoke the peace pipe and sit around the fire and, you know, tell lovely stories about our ancestors.
Just give me this tax cut so that I can expand here. I can expand here and employ more people.
Yeah, supposedly. Yeah. But then that tax cuts the
just goes straight to shareholder dividends. Yeah,
exactly. Or it gets the expansion is based upon. Oh yeah, you will have more tax revenue from, you know, this new expansion. To
yeah,
work
from the number of people that I'm gonna bring on board.
Yeah, so. You start seeing that particular picture is always one where you can clearly see a government would need its tax base.
Yeah.
So now, guys like Bill Gates will obviously now start being more prominent in the discussion of, especially of climate change. Here's the thing, Helmut. A state like California, before 2023, had been sitting with a 10-year to 8-year drought. A country like Spain, the whole of Spain, had an 8-year drought up until last year. Spain still has parts, still has parts of its country that are in drought season.
Aren't they just a desert at this point?
Parts of Spain looks most like Namibia, or a lot of Spain looks like Namibia.
Yeah.
So ask yourself the question, Helmut. Now, if there are two clear examples where I just showed you, which is something you can also go and look up on the internet, that a part of the United States and a part of Spain literally sat with elongated or prolonged drought spells. Now you go ask yourself then, so how often did a state like California get rainfall? How often did they get rainfall? Do they not know what rain is? And then you go look at the population density in the state of California, for example. They've got a city by the name of Los Angeles. They've got a city by the name of San Diego. They've got a city by the name of San Francisco. There's another city on the other side of a river, opposite Los Angeles, known as Oakland. I think there's another city. They've got like 5 cities in that state alone. And when you see these particular developments in itself, Helmut, you get to understand, okay, so we all know that the size of urban populations, the clustering of various particular, fossil fuel burning technologies in that population density, dimensions do definitely contribute to the aspect of climate change. Why? Because it has been shown. If everyone, let's say there's 1 million citizens in a city, and 750,000 of those guys decide to drive their car at a specific moment, then you're obviously going to sit with air pollution.
Okay. I'm sure at some point we have all run into, because at least I know I have run into people that, that deny the existence of anything, any such thing as climate change. Have you?
A denialist?
Yeah.
Well, I've probably met a few denialists.
Yeah,
in
I've met
Namibia.
A few, and I
yeah,
know
in
I've
Namibia.
Watched, and I know I've watched like a bunch of videos on that.
Much of what I've seen has been on the internet.
On the internet.
Yeah.
And what are some of the most reasons that are pointed out by what you know is it denialists? You know the way that you denialist, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What are some of the reasons pointed out as to why these people don't subscribe to the whole idea of climate change?
The first thing is they listen to someone like Donald Trump.
So someone influential.
It's
and
always,
not
based,
an expert
it's
in
always
the
based upon someone influential. In many cases, they come from the United States. You will even hear from, let's for example say from countries that are great US allies, like Japan and South Korea. Those guys will even come and tell you about the potential dangers that they face regarding climate change.
Yeah.
The weirdest thing is when it comes to the Americans, because they were also proven wrong about the COVID discussion under the same president, they lost the most people.
Because of pretending, you know what, it's, you know,
this thing doesn't work.
Happening here.
Yeah. And then what did you have? 1 million+ deaths. Everyone was looking at them going like, why the most sophisticated country in the world and you have the highest COVID deaths? The highest?
Yeah. I'm pointing that out because we live in a world that's dominated by people that, you know, revere public figures. And, take, for example, if, celebrities like, Lil Wayne and Nicki Minaj or Taylor Swift was to come out and say something, even if they just said that, as a joke, you'd be surprised as to how many people would take that serious.
Mm.
Yeah. So that means, if they said something as a, something as a joke, and that's something that's a joke is also false, you are looking at a very large number of people that are just taking it at face value. That this for them is the truth. It's not based on any scientific research. It's not based on any science publication that they can read. It's just the person, it's the reputation of the person that said it. So that's where it becomes somewhat very dangerous to stop reading.
But there's also a little bit of a fact, Helmut, that we also have to include in this discussion. The planet has also gone through multiple climate change periods.
From Ice Age?
Even then. I mean, supposedly remember when we spoke about the Irish famines?
Yeah.
There were two recorded ones.
Yeah.
The last one was the great one, which was just based upon, what happened to the potato crop.
Yeah.
But there was one 30 years before that. Or was it 60 years? But in the 1700s. About 60 years. Yeah. 60 years before that.
Before the famous.
Before the great.
Infamous.
The infamous famous one.
Yeah.
Was something because they did monoculture. They planted one crop.
Yeah, and also the British happened.
And also because the British literally said, hey, listen, we'd actually like a lot of this crop more to be exported to,
we're going to
the
sell
British
and,
Army.
We're going to go and sell and make money, wage war. You guys can die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the Great Famine, for its own reason, you can see there's a lot of human-induced errors.
Yeah.
But when you come to the one they had in the 1700s, which was 30 to 40 years prior to the Great Famine, is that with that famine specifically, it was because the whole of Europe was exiting the last ice age.
In the 1700s?
Mm. The last ice age concluded in the 1700s in Europe.
Now, here's the thing. What comes after the ice age? That's a scary picture.
But there's all
because ice usually melt when it's warming. Wouldn't that indicate that, well, the earth has been warming for a very long time, hence the melting of all the ice?
There is obviously also a particular dimension to view in terms of what does it look like for each part of the world.
Okay, so I would take it from the global melting of ice that it's been melting for a while and our human activities has just exacerbated the warming to the point, or more like, accelerated it.
Yeah. So
we're trying to watch our accelerating to the warming so that we don't microwave ourselves sooner than expected.
But the feeling is also there, Hamut, what many people would have observed if they've ever heard us talk about that, about climate change, is that there's a lot of uncertainty.
Yeah.
We have, on all of our discussions here in Eagle FM, we have not once said Namibia will see for a definite scenario the following climatic conditions, start taking effect.
There are a lot of variables.
We don't know.
Yeah.
the aspect in terms of answering what happens if you reach the 2 degrees Celsius, you know, warming up dimension, mm-hmm. what happens? So in the planning and the particular fear that the world governments have is this specifically means damage to agriculture. First and foremost, the natural environment, damage to agriculture.
Yeah.
We even saw it as clear as daylight to what happened to Europe in 2023 when they didn't receive enough summer rainfall. So what happens is in the summers in Europe, they get rainfall in the summer and they get rainfall when they have their winters as well.
Hey.
So let me say that again. They get rainfall in their summer, their uh-huh. hottest part, and they get rainfall in their coldest part.
I can't imagine mixing snow with...
But snow is precipitation, you know that. It is just frozen rainfall.
It's okay.
Yeah, so ad break. So we come back.
Great news. Impact just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of IMBA? Get all exclusive features for just $36 Namibian a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything IMBA has to offer at an unbeatable price. IMBA, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Heineken's iconic balanced taste that gives you that refreshing first only made possible by Heineken's 5-star credentials. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Welcome back. We continue with the climate change discussion, and this is based on the recent climate change impacts mitigation strategy, mitigation strategies conference. I like to call it that way because the name itself is just really long. Climate Change and Future in Africa Conference Series. Yeah, well, it's a, okay, a series is a good description because it was a 3-day event. Now, on day three, there's on day three, one of the gentlemen that actually participated in this discussion, because this event brought together a lot of experts on the subject of basically everything climate change, not just climate change, but also how to combat the impact that are coming out of climate change, like floods and forest and fires, especially forest fires.
Yeah.
How to detect them on time so that you can stop them before they, you know, cause the mayhem they usually do, if not focused right on time, and then, you know, at least the series of events that bring them together if they are not accounted. And we saw this with the recent fire in Etosha. Yeah, and all these things, basically, because everything is based on observation.
Mm.
The gentleman that addressed the conference on day three of the event, is a professor from Greece. By the name of Ioannis Peters, from Aristotle University of Thessaloniki in Greece.
Thessalonica.
Thessaloniki. I don't know,
Don't worry, Yama.
Thessaloniki? I think that's the Greek pronunciation. This must be English. Yeah. Mm. So, So, you know, there are a lot of stuff that, because a homeboy came with a presentation. And, the thing is, he's, okay, Professor Peters, is a distinguished academic and researcher at that university.
Mm.
Now, his current research, among others, now this was in his introduction, his current research, among others, includes AI ethics, autonomous systems, and intelligent media technologies. Now, one thing that he pointed out was the focus, more like the how to observe your environment to make sure that you counter any negative, so potential large scale destruction type of things from taking place, like floods, for example, and fire. And he did talk a lot about technology, seeing that's basically his area of expertise. He did mention two things though that I found very interesting. That if you are trying to detect fire stake, for example, in an area like in an area like Etosha, for example, it's hardware is very important.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because information gathering, basically his entire presentation, which took about, 25 to 30 minutes, his entire presentation was basically based on information gathering and assessing this information and then being able to make a decision on it. And that decision better be right and be on time. So, the information gathering, then, the fact that he emphasized information gathering a lot, takes you to, to the very basic of information gathering, especially when that information, if you are gathering that information so that you can solve a problem, you want to collect this information on time and as accurate as possible. Now, he gave an example of, small fires in comparison to the large scale one, of course. Then, the comparison he gave was that, having drones, because if you can't go, walk around, on the surface or on that piece of land for you to gather information, which I don't think would be a good idea for places like Etosha, because for one, it's a very, very large place to cover. You'll need a lot of manpower for you to gather all that information. So, he suggested, because this is what they use, I think, because he works for a lot of entities that already does these things, but, for predominantly Europe.
Mm.
Yeah. He did point out that they do use drones a lot. Now, these are drones that are basically equipped with smoke detecting type of technologies, so that you can easily pinpoint where's the potential smoke coming from. Because then, if you know that, like they say, wherever there is smoke, there's a fire. So in that case, then if the fire have already started or is about to start, you can easily pick it up and put it off. Unlike if you just have to wait for the smoke to be big enough, if the smoke is big enough, then that means so is the fire.
Mm.
So at this point, you are looking at a large-scale destruction. And again, Etosha, we saw this happening. And now, then he pointed out that for large-scale fires that are, he did point out that there are types of, there are types of fires that drones will not be enough.
True, because you can't just be watching the situation.
So that's where satellites now comes in. As well, drones. And he did point out that all these equipments that's needed basically in gathering all this information are pretty expensive. But the alternative is losing your resources, which is even more expensive.
True.
Yeah.
But then there's also the other dimension of what a wildfire actually also contributes.
Yeah.
If people don't know, in some cases, wildfires also basically rejuvenate, what do they call that thing? Grass growth, in some cases.
Oh, it's a good thing you brought up. Somewhere in the Caribbean, you watch, Attenborough?
Yeah.
There's a type of plant somewhere in the Caribbean or in the Mediterraneans. Yeah, the Mediterraneans. It's called a sister's plant. Mm-hmm. Now that plant has a very diabolical, more like a resource hoarding type of, type of a natural method.
Mm-hmm.
What it does is, when it matures, when it matures, it has this natural metabolic, what you'd call, I think, I don't know what the equivalent of a metabolic reaction for a plant is, where it heats up to the point of catching fire, because it also secretes oil, which is flammable.
Mm.
Yeah. So it basically bursts into flame and burn everything around it.
Mm.
Now, the seeds of a sister's plant is cocooned in a shell that is basically fireproof.
Mm.
So while all the other plants and their seeds are being basically set on fire around them, the sister's plant seeds are not damaged.
Mm.
So for that plant, it's a defense mechanism. And there's one also type of bird, which you won't be surprised where it's mostly found, Australia. And this bird just world starts fire. Because they know that if you just set a piece of land on fire, everything that's hiding under that long grass is going to start running. Then they go on a open buffet. I know, a running type of buffet. I don't want my buffet running. I want it on a plate well seasoned. But now, yeah. So the fire.
So fires sometimes do come about naturally.
In some way, it's good for the environment. The thing is, in more ways, it also claims a lot of it causes a lot of damage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then there's also the particular talking point that obviously stems from, what this conference also aimed at, Helmut, because it was mostly based upon climate mitigation strategies or disaster risk management mitigation strategies.
Yeah.
For example, like early warning systems and the likes. There was obviously one presentation that was done there, which I still laughed at, but was supposedly, it was done from, the paper was presented by a lady from Zimbabwe, a researcher from Zimbabwe. And apparently the guy went onto the street to ask, everyday people, do you know what natural disasters are? The guy goes, yes, I know what natural disasters are. I say, yeah, can you mention a few natural disasters to me? Yes, you've got bananas, you've got tomatoes, you've got potatoes, you've got this and you've got that. And the crowd obviously viewing this video, we thought that, this is a comedy.
Yeah, it better be.
But it actually also showed what the media does not inform people in certain areas of the world about. Specifically, if you had to open up newspapers today in Tanzania, it'll be based upon, the election win of the President Hassan for her second term in office. And it would also highlight and sort of like categorize all the supposed, election violations or supposed human rights violations that were encountered by people, from opposition parties in that country. So when a real life risk that actually poses a large scale risk to everyone's lives would then be sort of like demoted to like page 7, 8, 9, 10 of that newspaper or publication, or it would be factored into a specific specialized program on a TV or on a radio to like somewhere in the middle of the night and nowhere here close to the daytime hours of things. And by the time that something like COVID happened, and this is a unique thing that happened during COVID, Helmut. When COVID broke out in 2020, it was from an obscure medical article where this guy, it was a guy and a woman, they were writing about reports that they were seeing, scientific reports in the scientific realm.
Yeah, these are professionals in the field.
No, they weren't professionals. That's the worst part. They were just.
Wait, are you talking about the doctor that faced the?
No, not the doctor.
Ah, okay.
I'm talking about the journalists, the medical journalists that were writing based upon what they were seeing and the reports, because, it seems like the research community, the science and the research community, they update in terms of the tests they run and they evaluate each other's tests. But it's like a system parallel to, let's say, a Facebook or a Instagram or a TikTok. You see, you'd be viewing another content creator stuff on TikTok.
Instead going,
and then you'd like, or you'd have a negative reaction there.
Yeah.
Whereas in the global research and scientific, review, realm of the world, these guys are sharing each other's papers and then they would review each other's particular work. And this particular journalist, this one lady, because they interviewed, it was the BBC, they interviewed these three journalists that started talking about COVID before COVID broke out. Here, between December of the previous year, 2019, between October, or let's say from June and July to October, to end of that year, December of 2019, they were starting to see reports, research reports, come out in terms of what's actually going on in certain aspects. Those particular discussions pop up, and then they would write their articles, but then their articles would be thrown onto just the website. Or it would be like in placed somewhere on an obscure digital platform.
In other words, we are not getting this from a reputable source, so we're not going to consider it.
No, it's not even about a reputable source discussion.
Then what was it about?
It was based upon what will people be shown so that they be aware of an imminent disaster coming to them.
Sometimes you have to raise a Vinduk beer and say cheers to you, the real ones. You know, the ones who save you a spot for the game when the bar is crowded. The ones who offer to drive for the night to keep everyone safe. The ones who bring you a cold Vinduk beer without being asked. When they're there for you in ways you never knew you needed, they aren't just friends. They're the real ones. So cheers to them. Vinduk, 100% real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukulile oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshiwala onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile ko berewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Minutes left to the hour of 6. You're still with Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM, and we're here until that hour of 6. So we're still on again on the subject of climate. I don't want to say climate mitigation strategy, because climate mitigation strategy for me, that's where things like discussions like energy transition falls under.
Mm.
Yeah, but for the time that we are talking about putting together, you know, mitigation strategies, the impact of climate change are going to be felt. Now, how we react and forecast and respond to this climate change related negative impacts, that's what this whole conference was about. Because of climate change, there are going to be floods. How do we focus this flood and then move time, move people on time? Oh yeah, that guy also pointed out something scary. They do something known as Twitter analysis. They also use social media. That's one of those social media, social media platform that he pointed out. They do a Twitter analysis, and this is and he also referenced that, all these things, especially when it comes to gathering information, platforms like social media platforms, they do that while following the, privacy laws in place.
Mm.
Yeah. But they do something known as tweet analysis, where they basically look at social media platforms to see, what's being posted on, which part of Europe, for example. Cameras are everywhere. That's the word that, he used this other verbosity word. I had to look it up. Cameras are everywhere. So every time that people are, every time something peculiar is going on in a certain part or certain region of the country, even here in Namibia, people will document via their cell phones about that particular activity. They'll be taking pictures of it. They'll be making videos. They'll be going live about it, depending on how safe that environment is.
Mm.
And we've seen this more with even car accidents. When people come across a car accident, some people stop to help, others just stop for content. I know it's diabolical, but people do that, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, because cameras are everywhere, analyzing, what people are frequently posting about will, you know, is also one of that method that's used to, you know, that they use to sort of like, respond to these things. And also, you know, when people are caught, when people are, you know, are caught in an area, more like they are cornered off by, you know, from the mainland and they need help. That's where their cell phones comes in. You know, their cell phone comes in. They are either going to go on social media or call, you know, call their loved ones. And all these things must be monitored. Like, eish! The discussion of privacy here is slowly sneaking out through the window. Now you're at that point where if you are going to put all these mechanisms and all these laws in place, you also want to make sure that you educate yourself on how smart you vote, because if you have all this access given to the central government, all that, especially that access power, especially in terms of technology, you are looking at all it takes is one wrong person in power and you have 10-key tyranny. Yeah, but don't go that direction yet. Yeah, just focus on how in countries like not just Greece, but also most countries in Europe, especially Western Europe, what methods are used to respond to climate change impacts. Yeah, because you don't want to respond when people are already drowning. You want to be able to focus, if there's a tsunami, for example, you want to be able to focus as how far is this, these waves that are triggered by this earthquake that leads to this tsunami. How far is it going to go? Which regions are most likely impacted? And then you can evacuate them on time. And we saw this with the recent earthquake that happened in Russia. People were being evacuated in Hawaii.
But then there's also, okay, let me also just correct myself, Hamoud, a little bit earlier. I said like 6 months beforehand, but obviously it was the standard in terms of just a month and a half before COVID was announced.
Uh-huh.
So that obviously was an embellishment on my side, guys, just to let you know.
So it was,
By the end of December.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, December to, I think, November as well, because it was obviously based upon the amount of, data.
Yeah.
But the talking point that also stems from that is, many people try to understand, you know, what is the actual level that disaster would actually hit. We've seen disaster, with the malnutrition discussion here in Namibia. But when you go and read into, okay, so why is it predominantly women and children that are the most vulnerable? Then they cite discussions of lack of education level, lack of access to emergency help, lack of access to various kinds of jobs or opportunities in the community, and then also having very low leverage knowledge levels in terms of, you know, but just finding something to do in terms of generating some sort of value, or even if it's just about having a backyard garden.
Yeah.
And then the mother and the children, obviously they start, you know, becoming sick and all that because of, the supposed identified reasons.
Yeah.
I'm basing this off on the 2022 research that was done by, the World Health Organization and in collaboration with the Japanese government here in Namibia, when the malnutrition hotspots were identified. We obviously only heard about this in 2023 because we were still asking, like, but who told us, the rest of Namibia, that there was malnutrition happening in Komas, Omaheke, Kunene, and the Tukavango regions? Yeah. Who was telling us this? Because in our consideration is, was that in 2022, there was healthy rain. 2021, there was healthy rain. 2023 obviously was the anomaly. 2024, we come back, okay, slightly reduced rainfall. Then we get that severe rainfall at the start of this year. And it seemed like, you know, supposedly this discussion goes away. But you still know in the back of your head, there potentially is still unresolved cases of malnutrition and food insecurity and drought resistance or drought assistance taking place somewhere in Namibia. Yeah. Drought assistance, according to the Prime Minister, should have ended in June or July.
This year.
In the middle of the year. But it was obviously not a discussion in terms of saying, you know, whether or not the environment was conducive enough for where, you know, the people that were, that received the intervention. You then also sit with the discussion in terms of, okay, what does an early warning system try to do? What do you do when an early warning system goes off? How do you respond? There is the city of Valencia. Very good example. Early warning system, but the SMS comes in when the water is hitting you against your kneecaps. How do you react against that? You literally see the waterfall coming through, Helmut, and people are being washed away in front of you. And the SMS comes in and says, hey, listen, there's severe rainfall being expected in the next hour. The rainfall already fell an hour ago.
Boy, do I find that annoying. And not in the natural disaster way, because sometimes I'm just playing my video games and... your commander is telling you there's a drone incoming and that thing is literally in your face. I'm like, okay, now, what am I supposed to do? on the monitoring, because, the subject, you know, Professor Peters spoke more on disaster and risk management.
Mm.
Yeah, but the subject, but this conference covered everything from, covered everything from management, especially, from management and, and basically how to respond to it. Professor Peters focused more on how to forecast it, the type of hardware and software, basically, the type of hardware and software that you need. So that you do all the forecasting right in time, so that people are taken, in the event of any impending disaster, you get people out of harm's way. He did talk about sensors like a couple of minutes into his presentation, and he did mention that meteorological sensors can either be ground-based sensors or they can be sensors that are portable, aka on drones. And he didn't say AKA. So you can equip a drone with temperature sensors, humidity sensors, and wind sensors, and can take local measurements in the affected areas. Now, when it comes to drones for natural disasters observation, there are such hardware devices that have to be used. They have to be they have to be weatherproof, and of course, we have to be we have to have optimal sensor placement and battery placement of those sensors.
I was going to ask that question. I was really going to ask that question. I mean, some of the solutions primarily try to leverage like basic technologies that you can see. For many of us, we think that, you know, that the researchers or the scientists that would participate in these discussions would try to make some, you know, sort of like elaborate, come like with over the top suggestions of some sort of technology.
NASA technology.
You know, or coming here with, some invisible shield being put up and, you know.
Rick and Morty.
Doing weird things specifically with the rainfall to try and entice rainfall to happen. And then you realize it's like everyday solutions that you then.
Very basic.
In your backyard could even go and just buy a drone yourself, sellotape a camera to it, and then go like, okay, fly. Now I can also observe. The question that emanates from all this discussion is, then what do you do
with that information once it's...
After you've now sent that drone up, what do you do? Yes, now we can plan town planning and issues, but we were shown just now of what happened 2 years back in Durban. The informal settlement in Durban that washed away.
Yeah.
We were shown 2 years back in 2023 that the rainfall that fell in the middle of the year. Informal settlements were washed away supposedly because they built on areas or they expanded into areas where they were not supposed to build, which was not designated for people to live on. Now,
there's a reason for that.
What do you do in such an instance? You, now the researcher,
What can you do if the local
municipality,
if the local authority does not react?
I don't think it's a research. I have a lot of things. Well, maybe just they yell more warnings. I think to some degree, it was we witnessed the same thing. Was that around October when it snowed so heavily in South Africa? A lot of people were stranded in traffic.
Yeah, that was October last year.
Yeah,
And the snow fell here in Kiermanshoop and in Karasburg last year.
Yeah, now the thing is, people were stuck in traffic on highways. The question is, now that obviously speaks to either late warnings or no warnings at all.
And Helmut, South Africa is very close to the South Pole.
Yeah, it is.
Very close.
It's in the name, South Africa.
Yeah. We get our winter from the South Pole. Now, you really want to tell me that the discussion based upon early warning systems is one based upon, okay, now you get the alert saying, yes, Namibia will be ice cold in various parts or majority parts of the country because of this cold front pushing through from South Africa. And like I explained how a cold front works, a cold front is not part of the climate change discussion, guys, but just to describe to you the mitigating strategy scenario. Now you get the warning from the Namibian Meteorological Office about there's a cold front pushing through.
Mm-hmm.
The cold front hit Karasburg this morning.
And you're given a warning today.
You're given the warning now.
Okay, now.
That's the scenario I'm depicting now.
Doesn't that mean it's already too late for Karasburg? Because everyone in Karas is going to be going, hang on a second.
Do you know what a cold front does, Helmut?
Mm.
It's air that is so cold, it pushes all, as it's being pushed from the South Pole.
Yeah.
All air in front of it, it pushes that air. So it feels like a wind.
Cold air is heavier, so it's going to sink. So warm air.
Yeah. But it feels like a wind as the cold front is coming.
Yeah.
It's like a strong wind that is being pushed to you.
Yeah.
Then that strong wind the sun is shining brightly. Temperatures just drop like this.
Ouch.
The sun is shining. You're walking with a coat and everything here in Windhoek. We've all seen how ridiculous we all look in winter. The sun is shining, but because there's a wind with super cold temperatures, that is literally not going away. You are literally there yourself, you know, trying to stay warm and trying to stay safe. And that's ultimately how weird the climate is, or how weird climate works. It's basic things like air molecules pushing other air molecules.
Yeah.
One air molecule that's colder than the other one, bringing that one's temperature down.
Yeah.
One air molecule that's hotter than the other one, raising its temperature. Did you know, Helmut, that if it gets so hot in Namibia, that the rainfall can't fall?
So hot.
Did you know that?
If it gets so hot.
If it gets so hot.
So the water sort of like evaporates before it has a chance to condense and fall.
Exactly.
Oh.
Well, no, not the condensation.
Mm.
Look, the condensation already took place when it's in the cloud.
Yeah.
If the cloud wants to have its burst, its cloud burst, the temperatures from the surface are so hot that as the water is falling, it's evaporating mid-air. All you get is just that there's somewhere rain fell. You're getting that rain smell somewhere. You're just getting that smell, sort of like to tell you, here's a whiff. Just know that it fell somewhere, but not where you are.
I know, it's like walking past KFC in the middle of the month. Been there, done that.
And you see someone walking out with a bucket.
Yeah.
And they're busy already chewing on the bucket as they're walking out of the place.
They're even smiling, their nerves.
Let's not torture each other, Albert. Let's not torture each other here. So as you're obviously seeing this particular picture, né?
Yeah.
The picture itself does depict a scenario where to ask people, okay, just be prepared about certain things in the event something happens. Now, how do you become prepared, Helmut, when you've got farmers that rely on seasons for rainfall or seasons for harvests? How do you then respond to scenarios where you've got households who are communal and they don't buy food, they literally grow their food?
Yeah.
How do you then mitigate a strategy or develop a mitigation strategy for such people? Because we've seen the scenarios of what happens when it is expected of the regional authorities to dispense the drought assistance the drought assistance program to the impacted communities, where that particular corruption scandal came about, where the same regional authority officials were taking the drought assistance food and parcels and selling them on for profit.
Hamas style. Gone.
No, but really, literally, that is Hamas style. That is literally, you are right, that is Hamas style. Why are you selling on the food? If you were told, go and dole out the food. Why are you selling things here? Now, that's obviously the human element in the discussion. The human element is also the other scenario in terms of bringing awareness to a particular catastrophe. A catastrophe being a dimension of, okay, so how severe will a drought scenario be in Namibia? Will we have a resurgence of malnourished communities? Will we have a resurgence in people's cattle herds being impacted?
That's more often the case.
Which is more often the case? So far, I haven't heard of goat herds being decimated by drought. I don't know if the goats are more drought resistant, but I know that there are drought condition resistant goats that they know about surviving in certain dry environments. The Karakul sheep is one such particular, no, it's not a goat, it's a sheep. The Karakul sheep is a specific example. And that is a specific animal that was brought by the Germans from Armenia or Albania, one of the two countries, to try and survive in these harsh conditions, because the normal sheep just dies from dehydration. They die from dehydration. Sheep are meant for moderate climate areas, for example, like New Zealand, parts of South Africa, here parts in the middle of Africa, you know, where they've got enough cloud cover, enough rainfall as well, lush green pastures to graze on, and, you know, cooler temperatures.
And that sheep will now have to worry about landmines.
Where do the landmines come from?
M23.
I don't know if M23 knows how to farm, at least. I know they know how to plant things, but I don't know if they know how to farm things.
Yeah, nah, me neither.
Yeah, so when you view that particular dimension, Namibia becomes a tricky place. Namibia's whole landscape is a tricky place, Hamid, when it comes to agriculture. And you get to understand why it's immediately a hop, skip, and a jump for any particular investor or country or, you know, local investor even to look at something other than agriculture. Other than agriculture. They'll immediately look at, okay, let's go and dig a hole to get a resource.
Yeah.
Instead of you explaining to them, okay, why not look at agriculture? They go like, hey.
Look, but the example of finding your regional specific climate resistant type of a breed, be it for plant or animals to farm with, would be, I think, one motivating factor that we have in our, you know, in the history of agriculture, especially for countries like Namibia and South Africa. You just gave us an example that there's a type of sheep breed that was brought here, and it didn't survive because of the weather, and the environment is just not suited for it.
Yeah.
But when you bring in the type that's coming from a place like Armenia or Romania, then these breeds were basically, well, they were doing just fine. So it's more of a trial and error thing. We can say the type of crops that our forefathers were farming with, they are not cutting it anymore. They are not just producing the same type of yield they did for our forefathers, because the climate is changing.
Yeah.
Yeah, the rainfall patterns are even more unpredictable, and also now, well, because of that, now you have to find a type of crop that that speaks to the current climate, because if we can just say, okay, you know what, my you know, my, we've been farming with this plant for the past five generations, so I won't stop, farming it. But here's the thing. It worked back then because it was under different climate, but now it's just not going to cut it. So, it's either you can, well, be stubborn and starve, or, well, change and then survive. Isn't that what basically, well, evolution is based on?
But
it's about adaptation.
Yeah, evolution is also an adaptation thing. And there's an article that I read, Helmut, that also cited specifically that it seems that certain insect and some animal species are already adapting. On day one, we were shown a particular picture of that conference as well. Just after, you know, the dignitaries finished the discussion, that they have seen signs of animal species, polar bears, crossbreeding with grizzly bears.
Oh, no, that's not good.
And you see it in insect species, you see it in bird species, you see it in reptilian species. They are adapting to the changing temperatures.
Yeah, but this is how basically, this is the history of our planet.
Exactly. And obviously, as they are seeing these particular things, and mind you, there are certain parts of the world where scientists are still discovering new reptilian, bird, and insect species.
Yeah.
It's specifically there in Indonesia, Malaysia, those countries.
Only there. You know, only a very small fraction of the Amazon jungle has been explored.
For that, the most part, that too, the Amazon jungle as well. And the dimensions that obviously speak to this is, firstly, the strategy that exists is preservation, conservation,
yeah,
prevention, and maintaining the current status of the various particular natural habitats or ecosystems, or as they would be known, the various biospheres across the world. Because a biosphere includes air, ground, water, and underground even. So you maintain the biosphere as is. Maintaining it is a problem because there's a weird variable present, us humans.
Yeah.
You could get a president like Donald Trump that goes and says, yeah, go and drill for all the oil in the world. And then you can get
to democracy.
And then you can get a completely different leader that decides, you know what, let's go have war today. And one of the unidentified things has been the damage that wars create to climate mitigation strategies. Any climate mitigation strategy, any species preservation activities instantly get impacted because of a war.
Yeah.
And that is also one of the particular nightmares about the Ukraine conflict, is what impact does it have
on biodiversity
and on the preservation activities that were supposedly trying to preserve things.
Yeah.
Now you've got a whole bunch of guys running on with guns.
Yeah. You have tanks rolling into national parks and basically disturbing everything.
Exactly. Now you've got five guys who decide, hey, listen, let me try and test my hunting skills.
Mm-hmm.
What then happens?
All hell breaks loose.
Yeah. And that's the downside of wars. But that's not just the wars dimension of things. We also have to look at the planned approaches. I mean, one of the mitigation strategies was that discussion. Okay, it wasn't a mitigation strategy mentioned here in this conference. It was mentioned at the public-private forum discussion. It was actually the discussion you and I had about that opinion piece that appeared in our e-paper. The guy from Blue Kelp.
Organic fertilizer.
Yeah. But it's a fertilizer that comes from the sea that is considered 5 times or 10 times more nutritious,
mm-hmm,
to the soil than the conventional fertilizer variants that are being developed on the land onshore. And clearly you could see, oh, if you try to boost food production, for example, from the crop cultivation sectors itself, this particular method or new technology or new product would be a game changer. But then here's the question. How then do you also approach the water scarcity issue? How do you also approach the rainfall scarcity issue? I mean, we are so lucky right now in November, 3rd of November, 2025. We've got this lovely weather.
I remember back to 2023, we did not have this weather.
Not in November.
Not in November. We did not have this weather. We were busy baking it. We were on fire in November. We didn't even have that weird weather of last year, October's, the rainfall and the weird cold front that also pushed through, and then the hail that fell in Karasburg and in Kietmans. That same thing did not happen in 2023 in October in the same towns. It didn't happen. So if we are sitting here viewing things in terms of a time frame, a scale, and observing, you know, trends and the likes, you've got to ask yourself sometimes a question in terms of how does climate change actually manifest? Does it just happen in the snap of a finger and then things change?
Mm-hmm.
Or does it actually lead to a discussion of you can gradually see the thing happening? So now what happens, Helmut, if just next year we probably have the coolest year of Namibia's history?
That's not going to be good.
It's not going to be good because potentially it would mean that we would have this weather all year long. And I know the solar power producers in Namibia would be pulling out their hair, or what hair would be left. But before that, address.
When life gifts you an unexpected breakdown, take control with Express Credit. Borrow $3,000 to $32,000. Same day loan approval. Call 081-9500-500 for more information.
Heineken's iconic balanced taste that gives you that refreshing first only made possible by Heineken's 5-star credentials. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you.
Six o'clock on the dot. That brings us to the end of Home Run. But before we sign off, wrapping up. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
I supposed to wrap up?
No. Wrap up the point you made before we went for the break.
I'm basically done. Yeah.
Okay. No. Okay, then we can take it from there. Or more like I can take it from there. Let me just take you to one point. Crowd gathering, because for me, I like technology, and there's a reason why I pointed out. There's a reason why I zoned on specifically on this presenter on this discussion, and that's Professor Peters, who on crowd detection, he pointed out that sometimes people form crowds, and we have detected crowds. This is a different problem. We can tackle this as well as as well, and you can see now he's just pointing his presentation here. Now the same things basically happens in natural disaster type events. Mm-hmm. People are obviously going to congregate and say, to try and help each other out. I mean, in times of need, we more often basically come together. So you'll find you'll basically find more like clusters of people. Now, all this can also be detected, either via GPS, or if you have drones in the area.
Mm.
Yeah. You can do all this. But, the thing is, the most important thing when it comes to combating all this, negative impact, reacting or responding to negative impact of climate change, it's all about early detection.
Yeah.
You need the right technology, both in software, hardware, and expertise to detect all this, to detect whether it's a flood or fire on time, to make sure that you get people out of harm's way on time. Because then you are not saving a lot, you are not saving any purpose. Because if you are only telling people that there's a flood coming when they have the water up their knees, the question they will be like, why are you telling us that? Because we can already see that. In other words, you are terrible at your job. Now, The hardware and software and expertise required is somewhat of something that also, especially for for countries like ours, we need a lot. Okay, well, it's gonna take a while for us to get to the level that obviously Europe is, and that's not just in weather detection. I mean, we're like that in a lot of ways, including development, which is why they are one of our biggest developmental partners. So, detection requires expertise, software, and hardware, and you can harness technology to your advantage. But with that, this is where Home Run parks the bus, and until tomorrow, same time, same place. So for now, stay tuned in for Good Morning Happy Juju, who is taking over for Business and Economic segment.
You said good morning?
Good morning, Happy Juju. That's her voice.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah. So sorry about that, Happy. But you do go on.
Good morning, everybody.
I do.
Yeah, you do.
On that note, dear listeners, let's see each other again, same time, same place tomorrow.